from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. Coming up over the weekend, it was reported that the State Department has intensified a probe into former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's private email server, contacting dozens of former Clinton aides. Is this the slow train of justice, or is it a partisan vendetta, as Clinton supporters claim? Former Congressman Jason Chaffetz, who served as the chairman of the powerful Oversight and Government Reform Committee, which investigated the misuse of classified information by Hillary Clinton, joins me in just a moment. Also, yesterday I spoke with Louisiana Congressman Ralph Abraham about the outrage over a sexually explicit survey given to middle school students. Today I'll talk with the mother of the 13-year-old that brought the survey to the attention of the public when she spoke out. Kristen Willis joins me a little bit later. And not surprisingly, Planned Parenthood is pushing the FDA to allow mail-order abortions. Indiana Congressman Jim Banks is leading an effort to push back against Planned Parenthood. He joins us to explain. Also, today is the 70th anniversary of the People's Republic of China. As they celebrate seven decades of communist control, they are, oddly enough, forcing churches to celebrate the regime. For example, churches were forced to replace the Ten Commandments with President Xi Jinping's quotes amid pressure from the government. I'll talk with David Curry, president of Open Doors, which supports persecuted believers in 60 countries, including China. Plus, I'll talk with David Clawson, FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview, about his new publication on religious liberty. All that and more on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. By the way, you can find out more about this year's Values Voter Summit coming up October the 11th through the 13th right there at the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, lost in the cacophony of the impeachment stories is news that the State Department is reportedly intensifying a probe into former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's private email server, contacting dozens of former aides involved in email exchanges that passed through her server. Now, the Washington Post reported this past Saturday that as many as 130 former Clinton aides have been contacted by the State Department investigators in recent weeks, with many being informed that they had been found, quote, culpable for transmitting information that should have been classified at a higher level than it was originally sent. Joining me now with his analysis is former Utah Congressman Jason Chaffetz. He was the chairman of the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, where he led investigations in the United States Secret Service, the Office of Personnel Management Data Breach, the Benghazi terrorist attack, the IRS scandal, and the misuse of classified information by Hillary Clinton. After leaving Congress in 2017, he wrote The Deep State, became a Fox News contributor, and now has authored Power Grab, the liberal scheme to undermine Trump and the GOP and our republic. Joining me now is former Congressman Jason Chaffetz. Jason, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Jason, let me first start with this. Isn't this what Americans have been waiting for, accountability for all, that no one is above the law?
Well, the Democrats say out loud that they support that, but then when it actually comes to reality, they seem to balk at it and push it off. When I was the chairman, we had Ambassador Kennedy. He was in charge of management, essentially, there at the State Department. And when the whole Clinton revelation came about, we were eventually told that the State Department was doing an investigation, that there were up to 300 people that had touched this information. And what's important, Tony, to understand is it's not like for your listeners at home, you know, where you get your computer and emails coming in. It's not as if some are classified or some are not. The classified information is on an entirely separate system in a different part of the building. So to take classified information off that classified servers and hardware, you would have to transport it physically, transport it to another part of the building, and then send it to Hillary Clinton and her homebrew server, thus creating a great deal of vulnerability. And they never closed that investigation. It always bothered me that they never came to a conclusion, because if you're transporting classified information in a non-secure setting, then you should be fired and you should lose your security clearance.
Now, weren't there other individuals who actually were charged with crimes for not safeguarding this classified material?
Lots of military people have been prosecuted for this, and rightfully so. Classified information is there for a reason, and sometimes it's at the highest echelon. You know, it puts people's lives in danger, and names of individuals, and it really is a vulnerability that, you know, it's not just hyperbole. It literally puts people's lives in danger, and but it was done so cavalier, you know, such a cavalier nature. And these people should know better. They should lose their security clearance immediately. I read that they might have this in their record, so next time they try to get a job, they may not be. Why is that the case? It should lose their security clearance. You don't have a security clearance, you don't have a job. Go get a job in the real world, not outside the State Department.
So these individuals knew that they were breaching the established protocol for dealing with classified information by taking it off of a classified server and, as you say, carrying it over to then send it to Hillary Clinton.
Well, for years, the State Department has supposedly been doing an investigation. What you hear the Democrats trying to do now is say, oh, this is Trump and Mike Pompeo and trying to, in a vendetta sort of way. No, it was the Obama administration that created this problem. It was the Obama administration that started this investigation. It is now the Trump administration that is hopefully going to conclude it. But there are some people, I really do believe, Tony, that should be going to jail, and at the very least, they should be losing the security clearance. Unfortunately, my experience is that doesn't ultimately happen, but it should.
Well, let me ask you this, Jason. I know, and I know there's certain classified aspects of this in the briefings that you had and the work that you did, but do we know, what can we trace this breach of security? What do we know in terms of the effect that this had on, I mean, Hillary Clinton at the very top, I mean, she had some of the most sensitive information available to anyone in our government. What can we say has been the fallout from this? Do we know anything in particular that we can point to?
The Secretary of State is dealing with classified information on a daily basis. It's not as if she was the Secretary of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, okay? She is dealing in classified information on a daily basis, very sensitive information about our intelligence services, what they're learning, what's going on overseas, what's not going on overseas, different levels of classification. But even, you know, James Comey admitted that some of this information was at the highest echelon, passcode, you know, password, so sensitive that maybe a couple dozen people knew. But remember, it was Hillary Clinton that set up her own server on the very same day that she started her Senate confirmation hearings. That was not a coincidence. It was a way to bypass the system, set it up so it had the maximum privacy for her, and the consequence for the rest of America is it was the least secure way to do it. Mm-hmm. The people who set it up testified. They had no computer experience. They literally went down to something like Best Buy, bought some stuff off the shelf, and put it in on a server. And this is the way the American government was doing business. You've got to believe that the Chinese and a host of others were bombarded. The Russians were bombarding her and able to scrape off the data that was going through those lines.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no other logical conclusion when you look at how aggressive Russia and China and even some of the smaller countries have been using cyber, you know, warfare, so to speak, probing in, breaking into, whether it's in the commercial world, breaking into databases and getting information. I mean, if you just have a off-the-shelf package sitting there, I mean, it's going to be very easy for some of these people to break into. So you have to assume that anything she had, and I think, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, but we're talking about millions, literally over a million documents that was on this server, that they have that. They have that information, our enemies.
And they had it in real time. In fact, they probably had it before the Secretary of State even had it. That's what's so scary about this, because this server was set up in their home. It's the home of the former president of the United States and Bill Clinton, that's current Secretary of State, and it's like a Gmail account. And it really is scary. But the bigger point to me is you still have potentially hundreds of State Department employees that were part of this scheme that are still employed by the State Department. And that's just wrong, Tony. It's just fundamentally wrong.
So, Jason, let me ask you, where do you think this investigation that's being headed up by the State Department will lead? It's being headed up by the Bureau of Diplomatic Security. What do you think will be the outcome?
Well, there probably will be a referral to the Department of Justice, but I'm telling you, thus far, the Department of Justice has been unwilling to actually prosecute these people. Now, Attorney General Barr is miles better than we had with Attorney General Sessions. Now, when I met with Attorney General Sessions, I was so disheartened because he basically didn't want to prosecute anybody. He just wanted to let bygones be bygones, and that, to me, is not justice.
Any idea who may be caught up in this? I mean, we're talking about 130 of Clinton's aides. I mean, what any of the individuals we know that may be involved in this?
Well, it's interesting that five members of the Clinton team were given immunity. And so I don't think from Cheryl Mills and others that they will be prosecuted. There is an IT specialist who was given immunity. He worked 4 years at the State Department, and when I subpoenaed his emails, he claimed that he never sent or received any emails, which is just laughable. I mean, how can you work in modern America, let alone as an IT specialist, and you don't do email? Come on. I mean, they're just flat out lying to us. But there are a lot of bureaucrats who also should be in there. But interestingly enough, Uma Abedin did not get immunity. And it's always been a mystery to me as to why the closest advisor did not get immunity. And it's hard to imagine a world where, if not on a daily, if not hourly basis, Uma Abedin was also interacting with this, these emails that were so poorly handled. And even her husband, you know, Anthony Weiner, ended up having so many of these documents on his computer. She has to be right in the heart and thick of it. It's not as if the secretary was communicating with Anthony Weiner, but unsuspectingly she was, because Uma set that up, evidently. That wow. has never been clarified. And you can't just say, oh, that happened a long time ago. That's not justice.
I wonder if he sent out any pictures with him and the server, like he did his other pictures. Anyway, Jason.
Well, there's some evidence of that, Tony.
Yeah. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Great to talk with you.
Thank you.
Jason Chaffetz, former congressman from Utah, that was the chairman of the House Oversight Committee. Look, I think it's important. I mean, obviously, it's better if justice is swift. But we need to make sure that this is finally resolved and that those that are guilty of misusing classified information or mishandling it are held accountable. I think it's extremely important. All right, folks, don't go away. More Washington Watch to come on the other side of this break.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Are you a student? Do you know a student? Well, this year, students can apply for scholarships to attend FRC Action's Values Voter Summit at no cost. At VVS, students will join thousands of like-minded conservatives who care about the issues that are shaping our nation. They'll enjoy our student mixer trivia night, topics covering everything from history to politics to the upcoming 2020 election. They'll hear from key conservatives, including Ali Stuckey, Congressman Mark Meadows, Dana Lash, and more. They'll have the opportunity to pursue influential jobs and internships with reputable organizations at our job fair meet and greet. Students will also have the chance to learn how to impact our world by attending our student breakout sessions. From October 11th to 13th, come to Washington, D.C. for Values Voter Summit. This is one weekend no student should miss. Learn more about scholarships by visiting valuesvotersummit.org/students or by calling 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Yesterday, you may have heard the interview I did with Congressman Ralph Abraham of my home state of Louisiana about the outrage surrounding a very explicit survey about sexual behavior activities that has been given to middle school students. Now, as we found out, and we're still digging into this to find out more, but this is not isolated. It's in about 60 different schools and have these school-based clinics. Well, this one in particular was in Oakdale, Louisiana, which is kind of a rural area, very conservative area. I've been there, campaigned there before. Well, this all came to light because one mother had the courage to stand up and say, wait, something's not right here. Joining me now is Christine Willis. She is the mother of a 13-year-old son. Who was asked extremely inappropriate questions without her knowledge or consent when he went to the school-based clinic for a physical. Kristen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Now, your 13-year-old son, Braden, is a football player.
Yes, he
went to a school-based clinic to simply get a physical. But you know, as you play football, you got to get a physical, get signed off on. But something went terribly wrong. Explain what happened.
Well, actually, that was their loophole. He got his school physical there, so he could play football. He had to have it, you know, to participate in practice and everything. They used that to have him called out of class on a random day. They brought him to a room in the school-based health center, sat him down, and had him take this survey. That's another part of the problem. Not only was the survey inappropriate for middle school-age children, they're taking the kids out of class and having them take this survey, they're not acknowledging the parents. They're not requiring consent. The school is claiming that this isn't a school project. This is that they were unaware of this, that the school-based health center is just a health center based at the school. So I find that an even bigger issue, that they're able to just come to the school and check these students out of their class to be given a survey that the school claims to have no knowledge of.
So when you go to the school officials to say, hey, what's going on here? They say, we don't have anything to do with this. This is the school-based health clinic, and we're not in charge of that.
No, actually, when I went to the school system, first they told me we know nothing of this. It wasn't us. We haven't heard anything, but we'll look into it and we'll call you back. When I ended up at the school-based health center, that's when I found out, okay, they're given this survey. They're being allowed to pull these children out of class at the school. Then the school board contacted me, and the superintendent said that he was not aware this survey was being done, that the students were being pulled out of class to take this survey, and that it was inappropriate, and he was not okay with it, and he was going to look into having some of the questions on it changed. I haven't been contacted any further. I know that I went and met with them, and their concern solely was that I was uncomfortable with two questions on there and that I didn't want my child at the school-based health center. They didn't want to touch on the whole blanket consent form they used to let this school-based health center pull all these children in. They didn't want to touch on the fact that how did they take our kids out of class? The kids didn't go to them with a headache or a stomach ache. They just randomly pull them out.
So what, yes, the blanket consent, out. Is this a consent you give at the beginning of the year where you give a consent for your child to use the clinic if they're sick or something?
Yes, they don't have they claim to have a school nurse, but it's at the school-based health center. So you have to fill out this paperwork giving them consent to give your child things like Tylenol or check their temperature or whatever. But the problem is they don't contact you like a school nurse used to contact you and let you know, hey, you know, your kid came in today with an earache. I can give them this, or I think you need to come check them out, or something of, you know, this just, they go, and my child has been there from fifth grade through eighth grade, and I have never given consent for him to go to the school-based health center, because at one point, there was some controversy over, they started this when I was in high school there, and there was always controversy over, you know, contraceptives and different things, and I just feel like health care should be taken care of by the parents.
Right.
But the school
right.
shouldn't be stepping in and creating this health care system for the children to go to that doesn't contact parents for things. They require insurance information, but they have this big guise that this is free health care.
Right.
You know,
well, let me ask you this, Kristen, the questions that you were concerned with that shocked you that they asked your son, your 13-year-old son.
There was a question that said, asked them, have you ever had any type of sex, vaginal, anal, oral? There was some questions about girl and girl, boy and boy. You know, when you're teaching your child what you feel they're ready for, you don't go into detail.
Right. I mean, as a parent, you want to gauge that based on where you think your child is and when they need to know it. What this is doing is forcing parents to have these conversations much earlier to try to beat the school at doing it. Kristen, we're out of time. We're up against a break. I want to thank you for joining us. We're going to talk more with you. We're going to get you back on. But I want to thank you for standing up because you've brought a lot of attention to this, and hopefully you'll spare other children being exposed to things that literally can be harmful. So thanks so much for speaking up for parents. All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back on the other side of this break with more Washington Watch.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voter Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. Republican Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana and Bob Latta of Ohio joined other GOP lawmakers in sending the Food and Drug Administration a letter which warned against calls from Planned Parenthood and pro-abortion officials from removing restrictions on the abortion pill. Now, they wrote, quote, allowing the drug to be available without medical supervision will have dire consequences for women and children. Now, as of December the 31st, 2018, there have been reportedly 24 deaths of women who have used the abortion drug since it was first approved in September of 2000. That's according to the FDA. Join me now to discuss this initiative to push back against Planned Parenthood that's literally trying to do mail-order abortions is Congressman Jim Banks. He represents the 3rd District of Indiana and serves on the Armed Services Committee, the Education and Labor Committee, and the Veterans Affairs Committee. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Good to be with you.
Like, Planned Parenthood does not miss an opportunity. I mean, they're leaning now on the FDA since, and I think a lot of this is related to they're losing the Title X funds because they want to do abortions and not family planning only. And so now they're creating this app which will allow women to order this drug that will end their pregnancies. And there are health complications related to this. And they're wanting to do this without the woman ever seeing a doctor. What's going on here?
Yeah, Tony, this is part of Planned Parenthood's long-term strategy. That's what's most deeply troubling about what's occurring here. So essentially a generic RU486 drug has come on the market. But over time, Planned Parenthood has led efforts through the administrative process at the FDA, to crack down on the acronym is REMS, the REMS process, the Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategy. And the REMS are the regulations that are placed on providers who provide the drugs to women. But over time, Planned Parenthood has worn those restrictions down. They want to eliminate them altogether. And now that this drug is more readily available, you mentioned the app that they want, the Planned Parenthood app that they want to use to distribute this generic drug and other other abortion on demand drugs through the mail. The REMS restrictions and the guidance that's placed on how these drugs are used need to be held in place to protect the lives of women and those who use them.
Now, the drug, mifepristone, which is the one we're talking about, and its generic brand, the generic elements or the generic versions, the FDA requires through REMS, as you said, a healthcare provider must supervise the order of the prescription and the dispensing of this drug because there can be health consequences. What Planned Parenthood is proposing, what they're trying to get the FDA to do, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is they want this drug just to be readily available. The woman can order it over the internet, they can get it through the app without any medical supervision.
That's right. I mean, the Planned Parenthood vision of how this generic drugs or other abortion on-demand drugs, RU486 pills, that they would be over-the-counter and purchased just like Tylenol or any over-the-counter drug might be purchased. And that's what's so dangerous. This drug is so dangerous to begin with, Tony. Don't get me wrong. As we talk about maintaining these restrictions, that doesn't mean that lawmakers like myself and Representative Ladd and others would like to see this drug taken off the market altogether. But while it is on the market, we need to keep the REMS process, these mandates and restrictions in place, because literally we know, as you mentioned, 24 women have died using this drug since it came on the market. Now a generic, a cheaper version of the drug is on the market. The FDA needs to step up and enact the original REMS, which have been worn down over time Those limits have been displaced by Planned Parenthood efforts and other efforts from the left to eliminate them. They're not eliminated altogether at this point, but that's the Planned Parenthood goal. What I'm calling on in my letter with Representative Latta is for the FDA to step up and re-implement the full REMS process and place restrictions on how these drugs are used, how they are sold, and how the provider distributes the drug in the first place.
And that, I guess, is the American Academy of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists are actually saying the current REMS is insufficient to protect patients. So they're calling for even stricter guidelines in how this drug is administered.
Yeah, we've had that group and others come into our office and educate us on the REMS process. You know, Tony, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a pharmacist. So as I learn more about how these drugs are distributed, as a father of three girls, it deeply troubles me that this drug is on the market and being distributed in the way that it is.
I mean, one thing we do know, it's dangerous. We can see that from the evidence itself. Congressman Jim Banks, thanks so much for taking time out to join us today, and appreciate once again your leadership on pushing forward and creating that culture of life.
Thank you, Tony. Have a good day.
All right, you as well. All right, folks, more Washington Watch to come. China's 70th anniversary of the communist regime, forcing churches to celebrate, removing the Ten Commandments and putting up quotes of Xi Jinping. That's next. We talk with Dr. David Curry of Open Doors here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman. For decades, the nation's leading abortion supplier has claimed to be the champion of women's rights, but nothing could be farther from the truth. Planned Parenthood has repeatedly violated the law and violated women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the devastating effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities, Planned Parenthood is an organization that not only promotes a culture of death, but makes it a reality. In a new brochure from FRC, you will find evidence that will challenge your assumptions about Planned Parenthood and equip you with the information you need to be a true champion for women and the lives of unborn children. To order this brochure and to download your free digital copy, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
It's almost that time of year. FRC Action's annual Values Voter Summit is just around the corner, but there is still time to register. Join thousands of like-minded conservatives who, just like you, care about the state of our nation and want to do their part in protecting and promoting religious freedom and the sanctity of life, free speech, and marriage and the family. From October 11th through the 13th, come to Washington, D.C. to attend FRC Action's Values Voter Summit and hear from key conservatives who will bring real change to Washington. And learn how you can, too. FRC Action President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and Congressman Mark Meadows. The 2020 elections are fast approaching, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. Ask about our scholarship for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me remind you, coming up October the 11th through the 13th, the Values Voter Summit here in Washington, D.C. There's still room, not a whole lot, but there's still room for you. Make reservations today. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right. As I mentioned at the top of the program, today is the 70th anniversary of the People's Republic of China. Following the Chinese Civil War, which occurred intermittently between 1927 and 1949, the Communist Party of China had defeated the ruling party. In the aftermath, the loyalists of the previous party retreated to the island of Formosa, also known as Taiwan. Now, October 1st, 1949, actually 1989, The 49 is when the chairman of the Communist Party of China formally proclaimed the founding of the People's Republic of China in Tiananmen Square. Now, today they will host the largest military parade, according as they say, in their history. The capital has been covered with red flags along with banners draped across the overpasses that say, "Today's China is the result of the work of Chinese people." Now, the authorities have given out 620,000 television sets, allowing those not invited to still be able to watch the festivities. That's a testament of itself. They have to give out televisions. People can't afford to buy them. But in the midst of this, we're continuing to see China become even more repressive when it comes to human rights, in particular when it comes to religious freedom. In fact, churches being forced to celebrate this 70th anniversary. Joining me here to talk about the persecution of believers in China is Dr. David Curry, president of Open Doors. The ministry was founded by Brother Andrew, known as God's Smuggler, for smuggling Bibles into hostile countries. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
All right. What do we know in terms of what are the reports that we're getting in terms of how the churches are being really forced to participate in this 70th anniversary celebration?
Well, you're right that there's been increased pressure on churches. This is just one example of how China has tried to co-opt the movement of Jesus in within their country. And I think it's largely been driven by the fact that there are more Christians now than there are members of the Communist Party, if you can imagine that. There's about 90 million members of the Communist Party, not all of them enthusiastic, as you might imagine, because some of them are there through duty and requirement. But there's over 100 million followers of Jesus. And so that's forced them into this role of trying to understand how they can try to make the move of Jesus, the Christian churches, more subservient to the Communist Party. Today, celebrating today, churches are obviously expected to be observant, but it goes well beyond that. All the pressures that have been increasing on churches to add monitoring within their sanctuaries, rules, regulations that have been implied upon them in the last couple of years in increasing intensity is very significant.
I mean, China is moving in the wrong direction when it comes to religious freedom. I know there were many 20 years ago saying if we engaged with them more on an economic basis that we would see the human rights element improve. That's not been the case. The evidence does not suggest that they have become more open to the values of individual freedom and civil rights, especially as we see as it pertains to religious freedom.
Yeah, they seem very comfortable using market forces to drive their economy. At the same time, they've been more prescriptive over the last 4 to 5 years as to how people are to work within their society. What that means for Christians is that while there have been an increase in freedom, where they worship, how they worship, the monitoring of churches, there's always been a nationalized church, a three-self church in China, in the sense of since there's been this opening of their society. But with the consolidation of power under President Xi, you've seen more pressure put on trying to be first citizens of China and the Communist Party, and then to have some sort of faith. It's very much trying to force them into the mold of a church that answers to the government, which I think is obviously in direct contrast to the citizens of heaven concept, the fact that we are first followers of Jesus and then members of any other sort of group or tribe after that. That's the transformative idea of the Christian faith, is the work on the cross and what that means for our lives. And obviously, this is not compatible with answering first to the government.
Yeah, what's ironic about that is that Christians, by our teaching in Scripture, is that we are instructed to live peaceably as much as we can, as it is unto us what we can do about it, to live peaceably, and to honor those in office. And I think if they would embrace this religious freedom, they would actually find that these Christians are better citizens and supportive of the government. I don't find among the churches that they're anti-Chinese government. They just want their freedom to worship God.
Well, you're right. And as China was at near the top of the world watch list, our study of the data of persecution for a long time, and it dropped quite a bit. And that was because the government realized there isn't any moral framework to the communist system. And so you had massive corruption, drug use, divorce rates going through the roof. And Christian faith, offered a framework through the teachings of Jesus, which really brought about great citizens. So they began to open up the society. Now, obviously, they're seeing a threat to their existence because there's just more Christians than there are communists now. And they're trying to say, how can we're not going to be able to get rid of them. We've already tried that. How can we co-opt them? And it's an interesting drama that's playing out today on this anniversary, but it's going to continue to play out as we see whether or not the Church of Jesus in China is going to really integrate their faith into every part of what they do. And I think that's obviously a challenge for all of us, but I think especially it's playing out today in China.
Yeah. I mean, there's lessons to be learned for us to learn from what China is doing, because increasingly there is hostility for that full integration of our faith into every aspect of our lives. David, one final question. What can and what should should Christians here in the United States be doing as it pertains to China?
Well, there are ways that we're strengthening the Chinese church, trying to make sure that they're intersecting with other persecuted believers around the world. There are projects people can go on, Open Doors, USA.org, and see the kinds of projects and also prayer needs of this church. We first want to be aware of the spiritual battles, but then there are practical ways that we as the body of Christ can support each other and advocate so that the Chinese church thrives under the pressure they're facing.
All right. Dr. David Curry, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, you can find out more about the work of Open Doors, a great resource. We use them here at Family Research Council, but we also support them personally as our family because of the work they do in coming alongside the persecuted, actually helping them in these 60 countries. They track, not only do they track and keep us informed, but they're actually there helping, walking alongside believers in many, many difficult places. So check it out. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Well, joining me now to talk about religious freedom here in the United States is David Clawson. He's the Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview here at the Family Research Council. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
You know, we were just talking about the state of religious freedom in China. And, you know, the challenge for believers there, as David Curry was saying, that there's now more Christians than communists in China. But the challenge is to live out their faith in a fully integrated way. And that's not – that challenge is, you know, maybe not as steep here as it is in China, but believers here in the United States facing the same and many of the same challenges.
You're right, many of the same challenges, and we've especially seen that since 2015 in the Obergefell decision, which was when the Supreme Court mandated same-sex marriage on all 50 states. And we could foresee these religious liberty challenges coming. If you remember, Solicitor General under the Obama administration was asked by Justice Alito, and that's when he famously said, well, it's certainly going to be an issue. I don't deny that. It's going to be an issue. And in the last 4 years, we've seen time and time again that these religious liberty challenges, especially in Christians in the wedding industry, but even beyond that, even just a couple of weeks ago at the Arizona Supreme Court, siding with artists who refused to violate their deeply held religious beliefs and write wedding invitations. And it was a good decision, but even the reaction of the left, I think the Human Rights Campaign came out and said, you know, this is going to ruin Arizona's economy and is a blight on its people or something like that, something completely ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't want to get sidetracked, but it's interesting that the economy is used to justify everything. It's all about the money. And that would also indicate the idol that we've elevated in our culture today. It's money. Money over morality. Money over the truth of God. And, you know, we don't see it as the idols of the Old Testament, but literally that's what it's become. But I'm going to chase a rabbit there. You have a new publication that's out that is dealing with this issue of religious freedom. It's the latest installment of FRC's new Biblical Worldview series. Explain a little bit about this latest publication to our listeners.
Right, absolutely. So I'm excited about this new worldview series that FRC has launched. We have a couple publications out now. This specific one focuses on religious liberty. And in this publication, I make the case that religious liberty is something that the Bible does support. Now, there's no verse that says, thou shalt have religious liberty. But throughout the entire scripture, the theme of the Bible is that faith is something inherently spiritual. It's something inherently interior that cannot be coerced, that cannot be forced, and that the Bible provides a robust defense of religious liberty, and that church history, the theologians for 2,000 years have affirmed and have appealed to Scripture for their religious freedom.
Well, I mean, it really begins in the Garden of Eden, where God gave man a choice as to whether or not he would follow and obey God.
Yeah, absolutely. It begins in the garden, and then Jesus himself reaffirms that principle famously in the last week of his life in Matthew 21. If you remember, the religious leaders are trying to trip him up, and they say, we'll try to stump him on this tax question. And they hold that denarius up, and Jesus looks at him, and he says, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and render unto God the things that are God's. And implicit in that is that there are some things that are outside the jurisdiction of Caesar that belong only to God. Caesar is not ultimate and cannot demand the things of the conscience.
What amazes me is the inability to see that religious freedom that is really connected to Christianity. The other religions on is accepting of religious freedom as a core principle. But from religious freedom that is unique to Western civilization, that everyone has freedom. Even those who choose not to follow have freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. In the publication, I asked, what is religious liberty? And I define it robustly. Religious liberty is not just the freedom to believe the religious beliefs that you want to believe, but to live in accordance with those beliefs. So a society and a government that recognizes broad religious liberty protections, that's good for believers, it's good for non-believers.
Because you can choose not to believe.
Absolutely.
And you're free to do so. Because Christians do not believe that we can coerce people to believe, nor that God would want us to coerce people to believe.
Absolutely. So the very best that the state can do is to force someone at the tip of a sword to say they believe something, but they really can't affect belief at the level of the heart. And as Christians, we want a free marketplace of ideas where we can allow each religion to come into the public square for resources, for money, for converts. And
that's an interesting point because, Christianity is not afraid of the other faiths. What we don't want to see happen is that because Christianity is the predominant worldview in our culture, or at least identification, that it should somehow be handicapped or, it should be limited so that the others can catch up.
Absolutely. And famously, John Howard Newhouse in the 1980s wrote a book called The Naked Public Square, and he makes the argument that all of us, when we enter the public square, have presuppositions. And as Christians, the dominant demographic of religion in this country, it makes absolutely no sense to say, everyone can bring their presuppositions into the public square except you.
Right. All right. How can folks get a copy of this new publication?
So they can see it on frc.org/belief.
All right. And you can also just go to TonyPerkins.com. It'll be featured up there as well. David, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, check out that latest publication. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, information there about the Values Voter Summit. Don't miss it. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.